Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It's your host, Doug McBurney, right here at theweeklyworldview.com. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors. No, no, no. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you as we settle into the dog days of summer, which here in Colorado has been pretty nice, kind of cool and wet summer so far. So we're enjoying it out here at the McBurney compound. Coming to you deep within the bowels of the boiler room here at the McBurney compound. Joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Got a bit of an attitude today. No, first we should take a broad look at the spectrum of geopolitical news before we jump in here. Venezuela is in the news again, proving that even after socialists run out of other people's money, they can still rob enough from their neighbors to fund their tyranny, at least for a time. And I think it will be a relatively short time. Well, I should say I hope, but it could deteriorate even further. A tragedy occurring right here in our own hemisphere, right under our noses. And it's just sad to watch. North Korea, yes, they're in the news, of course, proving that the sins of the father are visited upon the children unto the third and fourth generation. And at the moment, they're primarily being visited upon the children of North Korea, but soon, quite possibly, to be visited upon the children of the world, indeed. Let's see, Robert Mueller, he's in the news. Have we ever even mentioned Robert Mueller's name? Do you even know who Robert Mueller is? Former FBI director, current special counsel, investigating everything, having anything at all to do with anything to do with Donald Trump and all that. What is he proving? Is he proving anything? Proving that the establishment proctocracy will certainly not go quiet into that good night. Indeed. I predicted that Donald Trump would, in his attempt to drain the swamp, would find that when he stuck the stick deep in the mud, he'd find he'd probably never be able to get it out. Donald Trump, is he even in the news? Is he proving anything of note? Donald Trump proving that Make America Great Again means never having to say you're sorry for your sins. And that Make America Great Again was really just a false campaign slogan. I was watching the CNN special original programming the other night on the 90s. The 90s, I said. Yes. They showed a campaign speech from Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton, circa 1992, saying, I just know that together we can all make America great again. And the crowd went wild. He said it just like that. Yeah. Bill Clinton, not in the news, not proving anything, hopefully to be forgotten. And so we move on. There's the broad spectrum of global geopolitical news all in a peanut shell there for you, for your consideration. From there, we go directly into the culture file where we're going to talk a bit about American culture. I got this story from Axios.com. I don't know what Axios is. It's a website, of course. But anyway, I don't know if they're left, right, or just left behind or right on target. I don't know. The story seems right on target. There's a new number of new reports, economic reports, reveal that the reason for the chronic inability of American companies to fill skilled jobs, it's not the lack of skills. It's not that people don't have the skills. But instead, It's rampant drug abuse. Yeah. Prime working age Americans without a college diploma are often too drugged out to get good jobs. And the big problem at the moment is opioids, heroin, even fentanyl, which I thought they only used in the OR to put you to sleep before surgery, but apparently that's rife with abuse. Yes, some employers say up to half of job applicants do not pass drug tests. Yeah. And one executive called the drug epidemic, quote, probably the biggest threat in manufacturing, period. It's not illegal immigration. It's not legal immigration. It's not H-1-2B visas. It's dope, for crying out loud. And the Federal Reserve surveys, the last several surveys, have explicitly mentioned employers' struggles in finding applicants who can pass drug tests as a major barrier to hiring. And so the workforce, or what could be the workforce, is doped up primarily on opiates, apparently. Opioids, opiates. Yes, yes. And at my extremely attractive audio engineer and I, the other night we watched a video on the news of police saving the life of an overdose victim in an unnamed travel lodge somewhere in the Denver, Colorado metropolitan area. And the guy was at death's door, and he was given a nasal application of Narcan, which is naloxone, the opium antidote, and he sprung back to life to be handcuffed and taken off to jail. And it brought the question to my mind. There's an awful lot of liberal-oriented do-gooder groups who are obsessed with saving junkies with naloxone. They're obsessed with making sure police departments are well-stocked with Narcan ampules on their persons at all time so that they can save junkies when they overdose. And I wondered aloud to myself and anyone else who was within earshot, which was only my extremely attractive audio engineer. She was the only one in earshot, which is generally how I like it. That's my favorite place to be. And I asked, why are atheists and evolutionists so obsessed with saving junkies? A junkie overdoses, is that not Darwin's law in effect right there? Is it not? Why are they so obsessed? What's the deal there? And I think it's the same with Greenpeace. What's the deal with the liberals and the atheists and the evolutionists at Greenpeace freaking out about disappearing species? Shouldn't there be species disappearing as the strong survive? And what about the climate alarmists? What's up with them? They're all a bunch of pile of atheists, homos, and evolutionists freaking out with the idea that the oceans could rise, killing millions and millions and tens of millions of people. But in their worldview, isn't that as it should be? Isn't that as it should be? I don't understand it. You know what I think that proves? Speaking of proving things, well, I don't know if it proves it, but it is evidence, ladies and gentlemen, that the atheists and the evolutionists are not really being honest with themselves, because their altruistic instincts are evidence against their atheistic evolutionary fantasy worldview. Deep down in their own little darkened hearts, even they want to help somebody. And in clear violation of their own proclaimed worldview. Now, I'm not saying we should just let junkies die. Or maybe that is what I'm saying. I'm not an atheist. I'm not an evolutionist. I don't believe that only the strong should survive. And I don't believe in Darwin's rules of evolution. But I also don't think that we should be subsidizing the bad behavior of junkies in the streets by making sure they all get a free dose of Narcan when they overdose at the Travel Lodge. Did I say Travel Lodge? Mm-hmm. Was it Econo Lodge? Did you know I stayed at a Motel 6? Was it a Roadway Inn? That's quite possible. I stayed at an Econo Lodge this week that was attached to a Waffle House.
No, that was Motel 6.
That was Motel 6, yeah. What did I say? Yeah, Motel 6 that was actually attached to a Waffle House.
Yeah.
Now, you know you're staying in the lousy part of town when you're in a Motel 6 that's attached to a Waffle House. But fortunately, nobody overdosed, at least not in my immediate vicinity, and everything went well. Yes, indeed. And so there you have it. Atheists and evolutionists working at cross purposes to their own proclaimed philosophy on a number of fronts, proving that what they really are is spiritual beings created in the image of the living God. And even as they protest it, their actions defy their words. And so in the end, it just proves that God is real and they ain't him. That's what it's all about. And what should we do for junkies? Well, we should punish them, first of all. They should be punished, and then they should be counseled. We should try to help the junkies. But if the junkies won't help themselves and they continue down their path, then if they pay with their own life, at least they could serve as a bad example to the children. Yes, you start messing around with that stuff, kiddos, you could end up on your back in an Econo Lodge choking on your own vomit. And the Narcan, now there's no, that blows the whole object lesson away. So now a junkie becomes of absolutely no use at all. So there. And now let's go to the science file here on the Weekly Worldview. We are going to, my goodness, this is from yahoo.com. Is that a legitimate news source? Well, I do have a story from CBN, at the Christian Broadcasting Network. So I guess if we're going to consider CBN worthy of being a news source, then we probably have to at least give Yahoo a cursory review. Archaeologists excavating in Jerusalem have found burned artifacts dating from 2,600 years ago. Researchers uncovered charred wood, grape seeds, fish scales, bones, and pottery while digging in the city of David in Jerusalem. The find, according to archaeologists, no, I'm sorry, according to Yahoo News, the find provides evidence that the Babylonians burned all the houses of Jerusalem, just as described in the book of Jeremiah. That's right. The artifacts, by the way, they were beneath layers of rock in the city of David, along with jars with seals. And the seals on the jars enabled the researchers to date the artifacts to the end of the First Temple period. And if you're not sure what the end of the First Temple period is, you're an uncultured, uneducated person. And you should educate yourself. So go find out when that was. Now, the book of Jeremiah says this, quote, "Now on the seventh day of the fifth month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar," this is something I like about the Bible. It doesn't say it has been reported that on the seventh day of the fifth month. It doesn't say that researchers have theorized on the 17th day of the fifth month. The Bible never says that ancient alien theorists say. Well, it just says it just right out there, just lays it right out as a statement of fact. Now, on the seventh day of the fifth month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord, the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, even every great house he burned. That's just it. Now, why does the Bible have the audacity to state things without any qualifiers? How can that be? How arrogant are these people who wrote the Bible that they would just state these things as if they're an unquestionable fact of history? How could they do that? That's not very politically correct. But through archaeology, it turns out that it's true. That's what it is. And the reason the Bible has the audacity to state things simply as facts is because it's the Word of God, and a fact is a fact. Let's go walking. It's Doug McBurney, and this is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back. So glad that you stuck with us, ladies and gentlemen. I have to tell you the story of the eating of the roosters. Now, I'm going to get back to the news. In fact, we just left Jerusalem, and we're going to head back to the so-called West Bank here in a moment. But I have to tell you the story of the eating of the roosters. So last week, you remember, I was kind of depressed that I had to dispatch the three roosters. But a good friend of the family, a fine young couple with children to feed, took the roosters and prepared them and ate them. And the young father even texted me a picture of the rooster prepared with all the accoutrement, the spices and the pepper and the salt there on the plate. And I had a chance this morning to get the story, the full story. Actually, it was yesterday. Got the full story on the eating of the roosters, and my fine young friend reported that the four-month-old bantam was frankly delicious. Juicy, tender, and wonderful. It required very little spice and was just delightful. The whole family enjoyed. Now, the two 18-month-old Americanas, it turns out, were a little bit tough, a little bit chewy, a little bit stringy, not the best eating that my friends had ever had, but it gave them the opportunity to test our theory of guacamole and pico de gallo, and it turns out our theory is true. It stands up to the test in the real world with an 18-month-old stringy, chewy Americana. He said once we put the guac and the pico on, they were fantastic. If you're not familiar with the theory of pico and guac, you'll have to go back and listen and get that, because it could be applied in your life and it could make your life better. So there you have it. It's nice when a theory is proven through real-world experimentation. No denying it at that point. Now, I'm feeling better this week because I haven't had to slaughter any animals. But I've got to tell you, I'm coming off a particularly brutal sermon at Denver Bible Church. It's Sunday when we go to air here. And on most Sundays, we attend down at Denver Bible Church, up at Denver Bible Church. I think it's down from here, but it's up. Trust me. A particularly brutal sermon this morning on whining. Yes, the pastor delivered a sermon on whining. And you're never more uncomfortable about yourself when you're sitting listening to your pastor describing you in traffic, you at the airport, you in general, whining about everything. And I hope everyone was as uncomfortable as I was. I realize how much I whine about things that, it just doesn't do me any good to whine about those things, and I probably look and sound like a complete idiot. And I'm probably fairly annoying to the people around me. And I had never thought about this. I'm annoying God. Because typically when I'm in the car, I'm there's no one else in the car except me and God. And anyway, very uncomfortable sermon. Not the kind of sermon that is a seeker-friendly sermon. It's not a feel-good sermon to hear that you're a lousy, whining, annoying person and you really need to get your act together. Even God is going to want to exit the car if you don't just shut up and deal with stuff. Anyway, but it's a great sermon. If you get a chance to listen to it, it will help you to better gauge your relationship with God. So I recommend that you go to denverbiblechurch.com and send them a message. I think the sermons are like $100 a piece. They're easily worth more than that. But if you mention my name, you can get the sermon for $100 this week only. That's not true. You get it for $100 pretty much any week. But be sure to mention my name. Get the sermon on whining. Not sure what the title is, but if you just say the sermon on whining, trust me, everyone involved with the church will remember that sermon. All right, now, let's see. The Bird Whisperer, another important update. The Bird Whisperer is attempting another sparrow rescue. She plucked a sparrow from a tree, believe it or not. And she now has the sparrow under observation. And she was, before we went to air today, she was feeding and watering the sparrow with the tip of her finger. And, well, the sparrow doesn't look good. Do we agree on that?
Yeah,
looks okay? I don't know why a sparrow would let a young girl just pluck it from a tree. That's unusual to me. Normally, sparrows, they fly away if you get too close. But this sparrow allowed the Bird Whisperer to pluck her from the tree, and the bird is in rehabilitation, I suppose. And we'll see. We'll keep you updated on yet another sparrow rescue out here at the McBurney compound. Indeed. So let's go from there. Let's go to the so-called West Bank, which, if you're familiar with geography, the West Bank means the West Bank of the Jordan River, which you could just call that Israel, but for various politically correct reasons, that's not allowed. And we must call it the West Bank. I just muted myself so I could sneeze. I apologize. I hope that didn't come through. Sneezing, by the way, one of the most pleasurable experiences in life, in my opinion. I always feel upbeat and just cleared out after a good sneeze or two or three in a row, especially. Three in a row is, I mean, there's not much better than that. I can just feel all the toxins and everything just spewing out of my body. Feels great. So I feel better now just having sneezed, and hopefully I muted it so that you didn't have to listen to it. I did my best. We go now, though, to the so-called West Bank in the domestic tranquility file. You know that tensions are high right now in Jerusalem, especially around the Temple Mount, as the Israeli government tries to quell yet another wave of hatred and violence from the so-called Palestinians, which are actually Jordanians and Egyptians and all other kind of Arabs who were herded into concentration camps, for lack of a better term, after Israel claimed the land in 1948. And now generation after generation, these so-called Palestinians, even though there never really was a Palestine, it never was a nation. These so-called Palestinians are, well, they're generally a miserable lot. And we'll go there now. The body of a missing Jewish woman, this is according to the Jerusalem Post, the body of a missing Jewish woman from the West Bank was found by police last week after her Arab boyfriend confessed to strangling her and bashing her head with rocks. He says, in order to, quote, release Palestinian prisoners. And so you read that and you think, now what could his girlfriend have had to do with the release of Palestinian prisoners or the plight of the so-called Palestinians and the plight of the so-called occupied territories and all of that? You wonder, right? How could murdering this particular girl have accomplished anything in regards to anything to do with any of that? Well, we read on. Police first received a report that Michal Halimi, 29-year-old Israeli woman who was pregnant and married to another man, went missing at the end of May, and they launched an investigation to find her. The missing woman apparently left the town where she lived and was staying at the home of a young Palestinian man whom she was in a relationship with. Now, you could just say that she was committing adultery with a young Palestinian man, but in the modern politically correct world, she was in a relationship with him. A relationship that's equal with any relationship, whether it be just a friend or married, or maybe you work together, you're in a relationship. She happened to be married to this one guy, but she was in a relationship with this other guy. According to testimony during the investigation, a friend said that the two intended to become engaged. That's the married Jewish woman and the unmarried Palestinian man. During interrogations, the boyfriend eventually confessed to killing her. He was even able to reconstruct the murder for police, and her body was located on July 24th. And you read the whole rest of the story, and you realize that it has nothing to do with Palestinian prisoners or the occupied territory or the West Bank or the Temple Mount or anything at all to do with any of that. It has to do with, it's just old-fashioned adultery leading to murder. That's all this story is. Why the Jerusalem Post included the man's claim about achieving some sort of release of Palestinian prisoners is it's a mystery throughout the article. It's just the old-fashioned story, the oldest, one of the oldest stories in human history. Adultery leads to murder. It leads to murder in Chicago and Denver and New York and Dallas, San Antonio, Minneapolis, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, the West Bank, Baghdad. It doesn't matter where you are. This is the old human story of just old-fashioned adultery leading to murder. And there's no geopolitical implications whatsoever. But I would say that if the governments of the world that are so concerned with preserving peace and protecting the domestic tranquility, if they would ever decide to focus their efforts on finding out what are the major causes of murder and assault and abuse in any nation on earth, they would find that fornication and adultery are at least in the top three or four. And then perhaps the proctocracy, the lawyers who are in charge of anything, could see fit, if they had the data right in front of them, that adultery was indeed a leading cause of murder, that perhaps they could establish some sort of justice and a law, again, that states that adultery is a crime. Maybe. If they had the data right in front of them, do you think the lawyers could see? Maybe. I mean, we could give them the knowledge. If they just went and did the research, they could find out without a doubt that what I'm saying is true. But would that enable them to do what's right? I don't think so. Because when it comes to doing right, it's not just about knowledge. No. It also requires some spiritual wisdom, of which the proctocracy is vacuous.
Your hands to yourself.
The Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you, yes, for sticking through another break with us. It's so good to have you along here in the studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer, whose mood is improving minute by minute. I can see her spirits are being lifted here. Go on here. Now we go. We go as we must deeper into the news here. We go to reason number 1047. To get or keep your kids out of the government schools. And for that, we go to DeKalb County, Indiana. Indiana, that's right. The buckle of the Bible Belt. One of the buckles. It's right there in the big fat middle of the Bible Belt curve, Indiana. A lot of good folks in Indiana. And Tammy Mick is an Indiana resident, and she's the mother of a middle school student named Phil. And Phil has been having a hard time at school. Why? Because Phil is in middle school in the public schools, and so he's miserable. She said that the bullying of her son, that is, Tammy said that the bullying of her son, Mick, had gotten so bad that he told her he had contemplated suicide. Suicide, for crying out loud. Now, to me, that's a big deal. Your kid comes to you and says, I'm contemplating suicide because of X, Y, Z. You need to address X, Y, Z. That's a big deal. It's not like I don't want to go to school because of X, Y, Z. I'm feeling really lousy because of X, Y, Z. I'm scared. No, he's contemplating suicide because he's being bullied at school. So what was hapless mother Tammy's response to her son's contemplation of suicide? She went and spoke with a biker.
A biker, yes.
One Brent Warfield of KDZ Motorcycle Sales and Service. They're in the greater DeKalb, Indiana area. And she talked with this biker about it. Yeah. Let's see, Mr. Warfield, Brent Warfield, the biker, he's the director of United Motorcycle Enthusiasts. He's been working to raise awareness about bullying and teen suicide, and so he decided to organize a special ride for Phil on Phil's first day of middle school because he heard that the young man was contemplating suicide. And so more than 50 bikers... Now, we promoted it on Facebook and social media and all that, of course. And more than 50 bikers met up with Phil and his family for breakfast before the first day of school for young Phil there at the government school. And they all said a prayer. They said a prayer, I said. And then the bikers escorted Phil and his mom to school. And then they dropped him off at the school. They dropped him off at the godless, homosexualist, abortionist, atheist government school, and there they left him. And is there more need to be said than that? Anyway, United Motorcycle Enthusiasts is having a ride for suicide awareness and teen bullying in September. They want to get their message out there for the youth that they are not alone. Although none of the bikers actually accompanied little Phil to school that day, nor shall they accompany him in the near future. And that's just a sad... I remember... Have I told the story of middle school? I don't know if I've told this story. This was... I will not name names, but... My family and I, we moved down to West Texas when I was in fourth grade, and my brother was in fifth grade, and we were bullied. I'll tell you what, we were bullied. In fact, one day, a crowd of, it's got to be 50 kids, followed me and my brother home, and they beat and kicked and mocked and spit on us all the way to our house until we literally... could just go through the door and slam the door on them like a bunch of zombies. It was like a zombie apocalypse. And now my mother had seen us coming home from the government school because it was only a couple of blocks that we had to walk to get home. And she saw what was happening. And she called my daddy, who was at work, of course. And my daddy showed up and all those kids ran away. That was very traumatizing for me and for my brother. And, we had to go back because that's what you did. You went to school. And so we had to go back, and it was, well, it was relatively horrible. Relatively horrible for the entire 6 or 8 years that I continued to go there. It was just generally awful. And so reason number 1047, to get or keep your kids out of the government schools, you can't protect them with a biker gang on a daily basis. And they may very well need that. So if you think you need a biker gang to protect your kid and to keep him from committing suicide, maybe you should reconsider sending your children to the government schools, especially today in this enlightened age when we all know that homeschooling is doable. It's in fact, it's a lot of fun. And as far as we know, none of the children involved in our homeschool here at the McBurney compound have yet to contemplate suicide. And so, well, that's one thing. And to me, that's not a very high bar. You know, my kid has not contemplated suicide. I guess I'm a success. Well, I don't think so. You know, they're also taught that they were created in the image of the living God and that they should love God and love their neighbor. And the kids who beat and kicked and spit on me and my brother all the way home from school, they, well, a lot of them, well, they might have heard that at church, but it didn't take for whatever reason. All right. Now, let's go to an update from the Domestic Tranquility File. We have an update on a story that we announced a few weeks ago, as it was announced a few weeks ago. The activists in Baltimore had called for this weekend, which is fast drawing to a close. This weekend was to be the Don't Nobody Kill Nobody weekend. Remember that? Don't Nobody Kill Nobody. That's all they were. Talk about a low bar. We're not talking about advancing civilization over a certain weekend in August. We're just begging that nobody would kill nobody. That's all. That's a low bar. That's a civilizational low watermark in Baltimore. Yes, yeah, and the Baltimore Sun reported on Friday before, Thursday actually, before the weekend officially started, that a free hug event was scheduled for Saturday at the park there and at the site of another near-fatal shooting that had happened just that Thursday night past. And there were 30 events planned citywide over the weekend to generate grassroots pressure to halt the violence that has resulted in a record 204 homicides in the city of Baltimore through the end of July. One organizer admitted that she knows it'll be difficult to put a stop to the gun violence. Gun violence, yeah. She knows it'll be difficult, even if just for a weekend. Now, the Baltimore Sun reported last Thursday that if someone is killed, so they were anticipating possibly that the Don't Nobody Kill Nobody weekend might not go off perfectly. And so the organizers were prepared and poised to act. They said that if somebody is shot and killed or shot, if a gun shoots someone, that the organizers were ready to go and collect money that would be donated to the families of the victim. And then ceasefire participants stood ready to stop what we are doing and go into the neighborhood and give love to the people affected. That's, they were ready. They were on their toes. The events that were planned, by the way, in addition to just being ready, the events planned included prayer circles, peace walks, and neighborhood cookouts. It's all well and good, right? 2 years ago, Baltimore Sun reports that homicides first reached record levels, so much so that federal agents of the DEA, the BATF, the U.S. Marshals Service, and even the U.S. Secret Service joined with Baltimore's homicide unit to try to figure out how they could help solve the killings. And that program, well, despite the assistance, according to the Baltimore Suns, the killings have continued and have gotten even worse year after year and are even at their worst this year. So all of the efforts of the FBI, the DEA, the BATF, the U.S. Marshals, the Secret Service, and the Baltimore Homicide Unit have been for naught. There's more murders this year than there were last year, than there were the year before, and the year before that. They even had a formal intervention program called Operation Ceasefire, which started back in 2014. And this time it wasn't the BATF and the FBI and the DEA and the police. This was, well, it was the police. Prosecutors, police, clergy, social service workers, and community members sought to confront those with violent track records to make them aware of what awaits their actions. And what awaits their actions? Lengthy prison sentences or death. Yes. That program failed and was discontinued earlier this year. How do we know it failed? Well, there's more murders this year than there was last year, than there was the year before and the year before that. Now, the mayor whose first name is escaping me, it's just Mayor Pugh, P-U-G-H, Mayor Pugh, said last Thursday that Maryland Governor Larry Hogan plans to direct millions of dollars to help control violence in Baltimore with what? With new technology, additional police, and an intervention program for at-risk youth, no doubt not unlike the two intervention programs that have failed over the past 3 years or so. Millions of dollars, additional police, another intervention program for at-risk youth. When all these people have to do, and I'm all for spiritual guidance in the community, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they need that. But what they first need is an education in justice. Don't warn the gangbangers that they could get themselves killed. The next time you convict one of them, kill that one. And then kill the next one and the next one, and then you'd be surprised how quickly you run out of gangbangers to execute. Because an object lesson in the death penalty would go a lot further than a drum circle or a peace walk or a prayer circle or anything else to somehow stop the bloodshed in Baltimore. We have an update today, 40 hours into the ceasefire, the don't nobody kill nobody weekend in Baltimore. A 24-year-old man was fatally shot, and a few hours later, a 37-year-old was also killed, according to CNN, by gunshots. He was killed by gunshots, you see. You know how gunshots just walking down the street. You know they're up to no good. They're gunshots. And sure enough, they killed a 37-year-old man. Before the cessation of violence, which apparently there was some cessation, lasted about 40 hours, community leaders had hit the streets of West Baltimore. They were urging drug dealers and gang members to put down their guns. That's very effective. Let's go out in the streets and urge known drug dealers, known gang members to put down their guns. That really worked. They should have went and confronted some of those gunshots that were hanging around. Now, Saturday's deaths that ruined the Don't Nobody Shoot Nobody weekend out there in Baltimore bring to 210 the number of homicides this year, compared with just over 300 for the entire year of 2016. Now, organizers are concerned that the two murders will cause the ceasefire to be viewed as a failure. They have some concern there, and you can imagine why. But the organizers say, quote, the measure of success is the fact that we're having this conversation. That's it. People are engaged in this conversation that might not have been engaged before, and for them, that is the measure of success. Not that nobody shot anybody, because that didn't work out. If you want to raise the bar that high, that maybe nobody should be murdered in Baltimore for one weekend, that's way too high of a bar. Let's just invite everyone, including the gangbangers and the drug dealers, into a conversation that they may not have had before. Really? Yeah, well, if you would just let one of them have a conversation with an executioner before he's publicly executed, then maybe I could agree. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you very much. As we continue here, I didn't know if I would even have enough material to do the show because I'm not reading as much news as I used to because, well, the whole Washington, D.C., what do you want to call it? Soap opera? I don't know. It's literally sucking all the news out of the news. And so the real news gets short shrift as the, you know, the Washington soap opera is big ratings, apparently. I mean, even the lesbian from CNBC. Not CNBC. MS. They don't have lesbians at CNBC. It's financial now. MSNBC. I love that. You remember Michael Savage's MSNBC, More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks? That's pretty funny. Even that lesbian, Rachel Madcow, she's even getting ratings. And so the media, well, they can't resist, and so they cover all that. And so there's just less real hard news to sink your teeth into. And so I had a very thin stack this week, and I was somewhat concerned. But as usual, I was up to the task to fill an hour with a completely unsupported monologue, unsupported by anyone other than my extremely attractive audio engineer. You haven't even laughed at any of my jokes. You're killing me here. I mean, I'm all right. Now, here's a story that I would have missed because Donald Trump and Robert Mueller and they're all sucking all the wind out of sucking all the air out of the newsroom. I would have missed this story if it weren't for my Parts Unknown Bureau. Now, this was sent to me by a listener from Parts Unknown because I don't know where he's from. But I mentioned last week, research indicates that the sperm count of Western civilization has dropped, in some cases, by 50% over the past 40 years. And so this comes to us from the Science File. It's actually a study from 2015 that smoking marijuana may lower a man's sperm count by about a third. Yes, I said about a third. Now, there's a good chance I covered this story in 2015, but I had forgotten about it. But my crack research staff in Parts Unknown out there in America sent this to me, yes. Researchers found that men who smoked pot had sperm counts that were 29% lower than those who did not. And researchers thought that that amount of reduction in sperm count was, quote, quite a lot, unquote. Yeah, 30%, that's quite a lot, I think. Now, researchers said it's not clear why marijuana use may decrease a man's sperm count, but it may have something to do with, big drum roll, THC, just like I said last week, yes. THC may interact with certain receptors in the testes, and you don't want that. You don't want the receptors in your testes to be interacted with, okay? Not by THC, for crying out loud. Moreover, the men in the study who smoked dope and used other recreational drugs, sperm counts were reduced by over 50%. Yeah. The study was published August 16th, 2015 in the American Journal of Epidemiology, for crying out loud. It was obvious to everyone. No doubt that this study is no doubt linked at kgov.com/pot. The most comprehensive annal of everything related to the negative effects of marijuana in one place on the internet. Every study, every research, every peer-reviewed article, it's all there. And it's just fairly obvious to everyone that pot makes everyone stupider and slower and less able to procreate and all of that stuff. And so I want to thank my crack staff. I shouldn't say staff because he's not on staff. If he was on staff, we'd be paying him. And we're not doing that. He's just a crack researcher. Just somebody out there who's paying attention, for crying out loud. And a note to all you young people out there. If you just don't smoke dope and you just pay attention, you can probably go really far these days. Because you're in a whole pot-addled civilization. If you actually have your act together, you can do quite well. And you probably don't even have to kill yourself anymore. But it's getting easier and easier to compete with the average doped-up millennial, whether it comes to procreation or just job performance. All right. Now, what do we have here? Speaking of that, American Green Inc. This is a story from Bloomberg. American Green Inc., which is a marijuana company, they say they're a maker of cannabis products. You know, they probably make handbags, right? And Birkenstocks out of hemp. Yeah. They're buying an entire town in California. They've acquired the town of Nipton, California, and they plan to invest several million dollars over the next year or so to create a pot-friendly tourist destination. Uh-huh. They got 120 acres with a general store, a hotel, a school, and a mineral bath for $5 million. That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, it's a good buy. That's all I'm saying. Well, I could go for that. The Arizona-based company will use the existing structures, i.e. the school, the general store, and the hotel, and they plan to build new ones powered by renewable energy, of course, because potheads are obsessed with renewable energy for some reason. And they plan to revitalize Nipton, California. The one of the spokespersons for the American Green is quoted in the article from Bloomberg. He says, quote, dude, we thought, like, showing that there was, like, a viable means of having, you know, a cannabis-friendly municipality, you know, and further making it energy independent. Huh? Oh, it's like it could be a way of really inspiring folks to say, you know, like, why can't we do that here, man? Unquote. That's, who is that? Just a, he said, maybe I didn't do this, what he said. A spokesman. Oh, project manager Steve. That was Steve. He's a project manager, dude. Pot now is legalized for recreational use in California, Nevada, and six other states.
What?
Uh-huh. Yeah, six. There's eight states now with legalized dope for just if you don't even have to act like you're sick anymore. You don't even have to get a note from the doctor. You just buy your dope. And the new Nipton, California, according to the reporters at Bloomberg, we'll have a production site for edible marijuana products, retail stores, and, of course, an artist-in-residence program. That's for people who can still bum money off their mom and dad and move to Nipton and smoke dope and, like, play with oil paint, watercolors and all that. All right, so there you have it from the culture file. Now we go to the bad Pope file, and this isn't just about the Pope, and I don't mean to single out the Pope, but the Pope's a communist. And not only is he a communist, he's a lousy pastor, he's a lousy minister, and he's a lousy example to the body of Christ. And if you're going to be the Pope, your economic policy has a lot less to do with your success as the leader of the so-called global Christian church than your ability to lead the flock appropriately. Although if you're a communist, you're pretty much disqualified. And so to prove how bad the Pope is, we'll go to this woman. I didn't get her first name here because I didn't care enough. But there's an abortionist in Italy. I only have her last name, Bonino. That's all I have. She claims to have performed over 10,000 illegal abortions during her career. She devised her own at-home abortion machine from a bicycle pump and a pickle jar. All right, and she founded the Center for Information on Sterilization and Abortion and agitated for the legalization of abortion in Italy, which she finally accomplished in 1975 when the murder of innocent children was legalized in Italy. She is a protege of George Soros, and she has been the listen to this. She became a political success after agitating for the murder of innocent people there in Italy. Once she got that legalized, she became a political sensation, eventually rising to the position of a European commissioner and eventually even Italy's foreign minister. And of course, because she is an abortionist, she's also a socialist, evolutionist, communist, homosexualist. She promotes mass immigration, European federalism, the abolition of national borders, the legalization of recreational drugs, and a ban on nuclear energy. She also supports same-sex marriage, transgenderism, and the abolition of the armed forces. She also advocates for the liberalization of pornography laws.
Isn't that a Satan?
She's the spawn of Satan herself. She's the daughter of Lucifer, for crying out loud. She was personally awarded the Fred Cuny Prize in 2015 by George Soros himself. He personally pinned the thing on her. There's a creepy picture of it. I mean, he looks like Satan summoned up from the pit with the smoke and the flames, and he's pinning this. Anyway, it's just creepy. I'll link to the story. Check out the picture. It's truly, I don't know, it make you very uncomfortable. Well, she gave a talk recently at the Church of San Defendente in San Rocco di Chisato in Italy. I said she gave a talk at the church. A church, I said, a Catholic church. And everybody there knew that she lobbies for mass migration, legalized drugs, against nuclear energy. She promotes nudism, same-sex marriage, transgenderism, the liberalization of pornography laws, and she gets invited to a Catholic church last week to speak. Last week, she spoke at the Church of San Defendente, and she said that high levels of migration are necessary because of the low birth rate there in Italy. This is the mother of Italian abortion claiming, yeah, I know. And she says the world is overpopulated because, quote, of all the poverty in Africa. Yeah. And did I say she was invited to speak at a church? All right. Pro-life people there in Italy protested Bonino's presence at a Catholic church, but they were locked out of the building. One protester, Alberto Cerruti, accused Bonino of being among those responsible for the population decline because she had advocated for legal abortion. At which point, he was forcibly escorted out of the church and locked out of the building. And her speech continued. In February 2016, now this is where we get to the Pope. So any of you, if you were just thinking about maybe converting to Catholicism, I hope that this will have some impact on your decision. In 2016, Pope Francis praised Bonino as one of Italy's, quote, forgotten greats. And he compared her to other historical figures such as Konrad Adenauer and Robert Schuman. That's the Pope. One local newspaper ran a headline suggesting that Bonino had been inducted into the Pope's pantheon, but that can't be confirmed because the Pope ain't talking. He does not want to answer questions about this. But what are the odds? He did praise her as one of Italy's forgotten greats. Bonino's appearance at the parish was part of events organized by communists to celebrate World Refugee Day in 2017, and so there you have it. So, all right, now, let's move quickly. We're almost out of time. Can you believe that? I thought I wouldn't have enough material to fill an hour, but I forgot how deep my talent is, and I'm able to do this. Not a problem. I'm not Sean Hannity. I don't have to read. I don't have to have somebody print out everything I say on the show. And I don't have to bring in lame, dim-witted guests in order to carry me through an hour. I don't need that. We've got from the Decline and Fall file, Rhea Cooper was born Brad over there in England, and she became Britain's youngest sex change patient at the age of 15. Now, this is a number of years ago. So at 15, she becomes a very public face for transgenderism there in the United Kingdom. Shortly after her gender transition, her life began to spiral out of control into drugs and alcohol. What does she say? She's after spinning out of control into drugs and alcohol and depression, Brad, who had transitioned over to Rhea, stay with me now, eventually transitioned back to a gay man. Did you catch that? She trannied back to a gay man And now, 5 years after that, now it's back to transitioning, or you could just say pretending to be a woman. So this woman's going through now her third gender transition. She went from boy to girl and then back to boy, and now she's going back to girl. She says now, did I say she? See, I'm even confused. Originally, it was Brad. So it's a boy, right? Brad says he's now finding peace as a woman. He says, I switched back to being a male because I was worried I'd never find love as a woman. By 18, Brad had twice attempted suicide, had turned to drugs, been involved in violent relationships, and even had become a prostitute. Hit rock bottom as a woman, quit the hormones, and went back to being Brad, a gay man. Now, Rhea hopes to open a... Now, Rhea is back to being Brad. No, wait, am I confused here? Oh, let's see. It was a boy, went to a girl, went back to a boy. Now, going back to a girl, now Brad says he hopes to open a beauty salon for transgendered people. But above all, Brad says, I'd love to have a child of my own. Says Brad. That's would love to have a child of his own or her own. Or, you know, it gets very confusing. But so this is proof of my theory that the transgendered are mentally deranged, and those who encourage them and even participate in their mutilation are abusing them. And the story of this person's life, Brad Cooper, the story of this person's life to date is evidence of that. But Brad hopes to have a child of his own. So even in the twisted and damaged and deranged state that he's in, and all of these transgendered people are in a damaged, twisted, psychologically broken state, even they have access to the blessings of the living God. Here is a person who's gone through every kind of trans you can imagine, back and forth, and drugs and alcohol, suicide, prostitution, complete disaster of a life by any logical measure, but still wants to have a child of his own. So where there's life, there's hope. Because even in their rebellion against God, their deep-rooted instincts validate the fact that there is a God and that he created us male and female at the beginning of the creation so that we could procreate and have children. And even someone as mentally deranged as Brad Cooper can see the blessing of having a child, and this person wants a child. So where there's life, there's hope, right? Now, mitigating against the idea that where there's life, there's hope is one Roseanne Barr. Yeah, Roseanne's show is going to be redone because nobody's had any new ideas since like 1986. Nobody in Hollywood or music or anywhere has had a new idea since the mid-1980s, so they're going to redo Roseanne's show. The show is going to contain characters, the children of Darlene and David. You remember Darlene and David? They were the dark, suicidal, they're just weirdos, right, on the show, if you remember correctly. Darlene and David are going to have two kids, a son and a daughter. Darlene and David's son will be named Mark, and he'll just be an average kid. No big news there. Just an average kid who'll probably crack jokes and make a funny TV show, right? That's the way it used to be done. You had a kid on TV, crack jokes, funny situations. It was funny. But that's not to be. That's not the way we do it in 2017. 9-year-old Mark will be gender creative, according to producers. Yes. The casting call out in Hollywood now asks for a kid who can play a sensitive and effeminate character and displays qualities of both a young female and a male. That's going to be one of the kids on the new Roseanne show. So the people who put out the casting call saying they want someone sensitive, effeminate, looks like a young male and a female, they should all be arrested for crying out loud. Putting out a casting call for a minor to play some kind of transgendered freak? You're telling me these people shouldn't be arrested? Anyway, that's it. Roseanne Barr giving evidence against the theory that where there is life, there is hope. And that's about it for the week. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at American Right to Life, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.